Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, it's Tuesday night, and it's time for the Pugilist Corner. Greetings, Joseph. How are you doing this evening? We had to make a few little changes in the program here. Mr. Stevens is still in the meeting, so we're starting off the show with Mr. Sugar Hill.
How you doing?
Well, guys, I tell you what, this is always a privilege to welcome back to the show expert trainer and a Kronk Gym legacy. The always astute and entertaining, Mr. Javon Sugar Hill. Sugar, how are you doing, my friend? And congratulations are definitely in order, brother.
I'm doing excellent, Joseph. I'm doing excellent. How you doing? Thank you.
Well, I tell you what, we're doing a lot better now that you're on the air, my friend. But you know, this is huge. I mentioned this on our previous broadcast on Sunday. That, you know, this means a lot to the Kronk Gym, to everyone affiliated with the Kronk Gym, especially your family, and, you know, to crown your first world champion under your tutelage. And I know Emmanuel had a very, very big part in cultivating Adonis, but you're steering the ship now. How impactful is this to the future of the Kronk Gym?
Joseph, this is very important, and it was a very impactful moment. After the fight, after the victory, I had a moment to myself where, you know, I sat out in the crowd, and it wasn't the crowd, it was gone, but just when they were in the ring, just taking the photos and stuff, I just stepped outside, sat right at the ringside, and had me a moment, you know, thinking all the work that Emmanuel had did, and you know, what he's done for Adonis and me and for a lot of people, and just for me to be able to bring, you know, Adonis to that world championship level, welcoming him to big time boxing with a first round knockout of Chad Dawson. it was something. It was a memorable moment in my life as a, you know, career as a trainer. And it just meant a lot for me to be able to come through with this victory. And it was something that Emmanuel had told me. He just said, keep winning and everything will be okay. So this was just one step in winning, and I know everything else will be okay.
Well, you know, absolutely, man. And this is something that, you know, we touched on a while back, even before when you guys were just talking about this fight, even before it was actually official. We mentioned the prospect of Chad Dawson fighting Adonis Stevenson, his first world title opportunity, and I said, look, this is such a huge opportunity, and Adonis is very deserving of being on the biggest stage of boxing, which is recognized by most as being HBO. And we stated that this, you know, HBO not really dealing with with Golden Boy Promotions any longer. This opens the door for a lot of new faces in the sport. And Adonis, I said, is, boy, that if there's ever a prime candidate for big-time boxing, it's Adonis Stevenson. And obviously, we were right. You know, and so HBO, what was their reaction? The brass HBO, what has been their reaction of that just spectacular knockout performance of Adonis Stevenson?
From, you know, the reaction I got was that it was an electrifying performance. You don't see knockouts like that in boxing. It's one punch. You don't see one punch knockouts on that level and that soon in a fight with a caliber of a fighter like a Chad Dawson, who's, you know, been at the top of the light heavyweight division for years. It was about 7 years, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone like Adonis to just step up, already being an exciting fighter, but as said by Chad, not to have recognition of, you know, it was just said that he had fought nobodies. And the whole thing was, at some point in boxing, you start off fighting lesser opponents maybe, but then you work your way up to finally fight somebody who's of a world caliber. And that's what you want. That's what you work your way up to do, is to fight somebody on a world championship level or top fighter. And it was Adonis' opportunity, and Adonis performed like a superstar in boxing. And he was welcomed into big-time boxing with a first-round KO over Chad Dawson.
You know, what's amazing, and this is what I mentioned this on Sunday night's show because it was just so impressive and so impactful of a performance that I think what was most surprising, and not to me really, but I think to a lot of people who weren't familiar with Adonis, was how intelligent the performance was. I mean, the way he set it up, you know, talk us through that, Sugar. How did he actually set up that knockout? Because he, you know, it was surprising by a lot of people. It was surprising to a lot of people because of the ring IQ of Mr. Chad Dawson. But talk us through that. How did that actually happen in just 1 minute into the first round?
So he has been working with, you know, good, you know, excellent sparring partners. He was working with heavyweights, and just me and him get in the ring and move around a lot. And he has to, I mean, we play like a chess game, you know, as I'm the opponent or he's the opponent. And we just do a lot of thinking, a lot of mental thinking. And for this fight, his boxing IQ was off the chart. I guess a high IQ is like a 120, 150. Or you could say his boxing IQ was like a 150. I mean, he was thinking that fast. During the training camp, and I believe it was ready 2 weeks before the fight. He was ready, and I had to just tone him down, like just kind of keep him at idle, because he was ready.
Mm-hmm.
He did a lot of different things. We prepared for the best Chad Dawson for the fight, the young Chad Dawson, the Chad Dawson that was hungry, and we had to prepare that way just because I didn't know what Chad Dawson was coming to fight. And, you know, it's a Saturday, Chad Dawson came to fight. He didn't try to box. He didn't try to do anything. And one of the key points was going to be to out-jab Chad Dawson, because they said Chad Dawson has these fast hands. Chad Dawson, he can jab. And I never really thought that much of Chad Dawson's footwork. I always thought he was a little bit slow with his feet, with his footwork and his defense. He didn't have that great of a defense to me. And one of the keys was going to be his jab. He got hit with a lot of jabs in his previous fights from other softballs. And I could see the first round starting when Adonis, they landed two jabs together, and Adonis was right there with him. They said Chad's arms are longer, where their arms were the same, they're the same length, the same reach. And it was a hard, stiff jab. And the second time, I guess they threw two hooks together, a check hook. Adonis caught it, but Adonis, I think they both blocked the check hooks kind of, but Adonis had more force on his hook, and he had the better balance. And they stepped around again, and Adonis jabbed him again, and Chad jabbed him, but Adonis got the better of the jab. And then Adonis stepped around again and fainted twice. And the way I saw it, Chad didn't want to jab with him again because he was wondering how this guy's jab that effective and that strong, and he's supposed to be the boxer and the jabber. And then Adonis fainted him twice, and the third time, Adonis told me, he said, when I fainted him twice, I threw my jab, and he started, when he started to throw his jab, he said, oh, boy, I got him. And he knew he had him with that. He knew he was going to catch him with a left hand, but he didn't know it was going to be a knockout punch. He didn't throw it to be a knockout punch. He just threw it the proper way and caught Chad on the temple, and the fight was over.
Wow.
So it was just so beautiful, just the way he fainted. It looked like the old school crunk fighters, where they used to faint up and down and then throw the right hand, like when you saw Thomas Hearns knock out Roberto Duran. He jabbed him, and he looked down, and he shot a 1-2. and then right to the head and knocked Roberto Duran out cold. It reminded me similar to that fight right there.
Woo! Gosh, man. Welcome to big time boxing indeed, Adonis. My goodness. What's amazing is that going into this fight, you heard this on the show last week. You opened up the show and you stated that, wow, you took exception and you kind of resented the idea that Chad's people were treating this like it was a mere tune-up. And you stated, look, if he has that mentality going into this fight, boy, he's in trouble.
And Joe, he was in serious trouble, brother. Yeah, and to say that, you know, what we talked about before, but leading up to the fight, the week of the fight, all of the press was reports that Chad was giving the press, they were just saying he was, oh, this is the best training camp of my life. I'm back with Eddie Mustafa, and it was no excuse. If he didn't mentally prepare or prepare properly, because he did state that he prepared properly, and this is the best camp of his life, is what he said. And, you know, to go in there and get, to get knocked out in the first round, it's just, you have to give credit to Adonis. And some of the things that Chad said before the fight, just, you know, shouldn't have been said, you know, to say, oh, he fought a bunch of nobodies. He ain't fought nobody. And those guys that Adonis fought, you know, to their credit, it's kind of funny now, but if I recall, I asked Adonis, I said, was that the quickest knockout you ever had? He said, yeah. So all those nobodies that Adonis was supposed to have fought lasted longer than Chad Dawson in the fight.
Oh, that's absolutely brilliant. Now, one of the things that I wanted to bring up and I wanted to get your reaction from was that a lot of critics are now saying, well, it's obvious that Chad Dawson was carrying around the lingering mental effects of being stopped by Andre Ward. And it looks like he might be, you know, at the end of his career, and he might want to think about retirement. And it almost seems like they don't want to give Adonis the appropriate credit that he deserves for working as hard as he has to get to this point. What are your thoughts and what are your comments in rebuttal and retort to all of the critics who think that this is just the twilight of Chad's career?
For the critics, they can just keep watching Adonis Stevenson. If they don't believe him, keep watching. he was prepared for that fight. Like Adonis said, it wasn't his fault that the fight was over so fast. He didn't expect it to be over that fast with one punch, you know, in the first round. He stated that, you know, it would probably be like the sixth round or something like that. So Adonis respected Chad to not, you know, look at him as, well, I'm going to knock him out in the first round and, you know, things like that. So if you don't believe it, you should have to watch and wait to see the next Adonis Stevenson fight. He didn't get to use all of his tools and experience and things that he's been working on and getting better at, because it was over so soon. And it's almost, you can say it's almost a bad thing that happened, but I think it's an even better thing that he got the first round knockout to bring some excitement to boxing and to make himself eligible to be a superstar in boxing and look for bigger, better fights in either division, as a light heavyweight or a super middleweight.
You know, that's really, really exciting because, yeah, when it was on the show a couple weeks ago, he stated that, hey, I'm not, I can still compete at 168. In fact, that's where the big, big fights are, and I still want to fight at 168. So, I know this is a little soon. The fight just happened on Saturday. But in your mind, what are the fights that Jim and Adonis, what are the fights that they actually want to close out 2013?
Joseph, they want the best fights. They want the champions. They want to fight the top elite guys, whether it be Carl Frock, or whether it be Bernard Hopkins, whether it be Andre Ward. Those are, I guess, the elite fighters in those divisions. And he would like to fight those guys to prove himself as being the best fighter in those two divisions and making himself a bigger superstar in boxing, like a Mike Tyson, as he stated. He said, like Mike Tyson, I can punch with either hand. He's just that exciting. And a lot of people missed that fight because they were trying to get some snacks or they were texting or tweeting. And it's just something that makes you have to say, man, when his fight comes on, I better be there at the beginning. I better not go get anything while he's fighting and just watch it because he's so electrifying and has power in either hand. At any time, he can knock somebody out, whether it's the first round or the 12th round. That's exciting.
Well, I tell you, you know, that you're absolutely right. That is something that has been sorely missing from boxing, even in the heavyweight division. You know, we've seen the Klitschko brothers, and they've been so dominant, but they're not those type of fighters. They don't really starch anyone with any one shot. It's more of an accumulated effort. But with Adonis, boy, you're absolutely right. This guy has thunder in both hands, and yeah, he can easily end the fight with one shot. You know, is that something that all fight fans really should be prepared for from this point forward?
I think so. And and be prepared to enjoy boxing again. Boxing has been, like you said, something like that has been sorely missed. And it's much overdue. And Adonis brings that to boxing. He brings the excitement back. And, you know, just watching him, listening to his story and the things that he's been through in life, and to overcome so much, and to be on that stage at that particular time in his life, is something that he dreamed about. And you know, he should be an example to the younger generation out there. And that, you know, if you make a mistake, that you know you can still bounce back and become something and do something with yourself and be a positive image out here versus a bad image. And he's shown that. A lot of people don't like, you know, they have questions about his past and things like that, but that's his past. And, you know, everyone was young once, and everyone's done something that they weren't supposed to do, whether they got caught or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you get older and you get mature and you learn. That's just part of life, and it's a part of growing up.
Boy, you're absolutely right, and yeah, your actions define you. You know what's past is it's history. There's nothing you can do to change that. The only thing you can do is affect your just do the right thing and just affect your actions from this point forward. And you know what's amazing is that Adonis has really made the most of his situation. But I really have to point to how, you know, and I've watched a lot of, you know, I've seen as much fight tape as I possibly can get my hands on Adonis Stevenson, and what's amazing is I've noticed how much he's progressed over the past 3 years. It's absolutely incredible, and what's amazing is he seems to be progressing and improving with each and every fight. Is that indeed the case, Sugar?
That's what I'm seeing. I remember when he first came into the gym, and he was always just a strong guy, strong, aggressive, high-strung fighter when he comes into the gym, and he gained his respect right away. He just he needed, you know, some basic things to work on, and those are the things that he's been working on the past few years, and this is something that's becoming more him now, and he's allowing himself and finding himself to be able to do a lot more different things. He's seeing a lot more. Which is taking his IQ level up. He's able to be in position and balance and see his opponent's mistakes and capitalize on them as quick as possible.
You know, what's amazing is we're going to shift gears a little bit, and we're going to promote the June 22nd bout in the co-main event. Your man, Jonathan Banks, he has a return bout with Mr. Seth Mitchell. It's going to be on Showtime. What's amazing is that you look in the main event, Paulie Malignaggi versus Adrian Broner, and these guys are doing a brilliant job of promoting this. This has to be one of the more highly anticipated fights I think we've seen all year just because of their mouths. But then you look at the co-main event, Jonathan and Seth These guys are two gentlemen. They don't have an ill word to say about anyone, including their opponents. You know, but what should we expect in the ring on June 22nd, Sugar?
You're going to see fireworks. You're going to see a new, I shouldn't say new, I try not to use that word, but I like to say now the old Jonathan Banks. The Jonathan Banks back when he was an amateur and he was hungry and he was winning national championships and had that desire. That Jonathan Banks is back. And it was back before that fight where a lot of people doubted him. And I'm assuming that's why Seth Mitchell and his team took that fight with Jonathan Banks, because they thought it was a stepping stone for Seth Mitchell to move him higher in the rankings and fighting for a heavyweight championship against one of the Klitschko brothers. Jonathan is not that person that they thought he was or that he was a few years ago. Jonathan has found a new life and excitement, and he sort of reminds me of Adonis, because Jonathan is still learning. So from the last fight, which people saw, they didn't get to see that much of Jonathan Banks. He's worked on a lot more things, and he's going to be a lot more exciting than the first fight.
Wow. That is amazing. You know, I'm so excited to see this, guys, and it's happening Saturday, June 22nd on Showtime in just 2 weeks. You're a busy man, Sugar. How do you and it's about to get even busier now, isn't it, with the success of your current stable. Are you ready for this, man?
I'm ready. I don't have a choice, but I'm not mad that things that I'm staying busy. I like to stay busy. The busier I am, the more I learn from different fighters and work in different fights, and the sharper I get. It's one of the things I've always enjoyed, you know, working with the amateur team and everything, going to tournaments. I normally have about 5 or 6 fighters fighting in a tournament, national tournaments, and I'm staying busy. So from the first fight to the last fight, I've stayed sharp. My mind doesn't get a chance to wander or do anything else. I go from one fight to the next. And I've always liked that because I know I get a lot sharper, and it just helps my IQ out and helps my understanding and being able to see these fights and give better advice to my team, to my fighters going into these fights. It just works great for me to stay busy.
Well, I tell you what, brother, it's always a privilege to feature you on the Pugilist Corner, man. We couldn't be any happier for the success that you and your fighters are currently enjoying. And so congratulations, my friend. Enjoy this moment. We know there's going to be several more moments like this, and we're so excited to be sharing this with you. So congratulations once again, my friend, and it is always an honor to feature you on the show. And we'll be watching and rooting for you, brother, on June 22nd when your guy faces Seth Mitchell. June 22nd on Showtime. Congratulations, brother, and thank you so much for being on the Pugilist Corner tonight, my friend.
Okay, thank you. I'm always happy to be on the Pugilist Corner and talking with you. And when we talk, it's just like with two buddies sitting down talking, so it's no big deal. And you always know how to talk to people. You know, that's one thing I like about you. So it's always a pleasure for me to come on here and talk to you on the show.
Awesome, brother. Well, I tell you what, the feeling is mutual, my friend. And, we're very blessed on the show to be featuring the always astute and entertaining Mr. Sugar Hill. So, hey, brother, thank you so much for being on the show. And we cannot wait to feature you one more time. And please keep all of our listeners, all the fans of the show, keep us up to date when the new Kronk Gym is going to open later on this summer.
I definitely will. That's why I'm putting in so much hard work now, so we can have a new gym for my amateur team, who I dearly miss not having them together and not being able to see, you know, Jonathan and Adonis actually training for these fights and learn something themselves and keep them guys motivated.
Wow, I tell you what, that is a completely – that's another segment, man. That's exciting. But, hey, Sugar, congratulations once again, brother, and thank you so much for being on the program, my friend.
Okay, Joseph, you take it easy. Appreciate it again.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Guys, that was the always entertaining Mr. Sugar Hill. And, man, tell you what, sky's the limit for Sugar, Adonis, Jonathan, everyone affiliated with the new Kronk Gym. And I'll tell you what, Emmanuel is right now, I'm sure he's smiling from ear to ear. But, JK, do we have our next guest in the queue?
Yes, sir. Pop introductions, please, for Mr. Fast Champ, Fast Eddie Chambers.
Guys, it is always an honor to feature one of the best technical fighters in boxing. He is going to be making his long-awaited return to the ring on August 3rd at the Mohegan Sun Casino in Uncasville, Connecticut. Please welcome back to the show, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
No, I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well just here watching the game as we're talking.
Well, I tell you what, I know this is not the fight that you originally wanted to make your comeback, but, hey, you're stepping in the ring, and you're going to be featured on NBC Sports Network. You're going to be taking on the very young South African cruiserweight, Thabiso Matshunu. Now, I don't know if you're very familiar with this guy. How tough is it to get into the ring and prepare for someone that most people aren't very familiar with? How difficult is this?
Well, I can imagine for the promoters and all the others involved, it's difficult to sell it. I mean, but thank goodness for them, this most likely is not going to be the main event. So their job is a little easier where they can promote the other fights. But, you know, there's a bit of trash talking, and if you want to call it bad blood, going back and forth. So I guess you could talk about it a little bit and get people a little interested. But as far as me preparing, it's more of a challenge preparing for someone that you don't even really know about. Like, I mean, there's not even a whole lot of video on this guy. But from what I've seen, he's doable. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, you know what I mean? Like I said, I'm always motivated to fight. And I mean, at any time, you know, someone get in there and lightning can strike and something that no one expects to happen can happen. Therefore, that's what makes me train so hard. You know what I mean? For someone even of this guy's level. So it's difficult to a degree, but as far as saying getting in shape and being prepared to fight physically, I'm going to definitely be there.
You know, how hard was it for you to watch? Because I know you and Kathy Duva, I'm referring to, really wanted the fight with Dennis Lebedev.
Mm-hmm.
He chooses to fight Guillermo Jones. Guillermo Jones just does a number on him.
Right.
And becomes the new WBA cruiserweight champion. How tough was it to watch knowing that, hey, that would have been me? You know, how tough was that for you?
Well, it's hard knowing that, you know, that was right. I was right on the doorstep of that fight, you know, coming right in. And then Don did his little thing and got his guy in there, which, hey, you know what I mean? You gotta love and respect what these guys can do, even in the sport where the guys in the ring should be making a decision, not making the decisions so much, but should be the reason for fights to happen and not happen. But honestly, it was disappointing. But now my sights are just set on now. It's on Jones or someone like that or a champion, any of the champions really. You know what I mean? But, you know, not to look past the guy I got to face because there's not a lot I know about this guy. And you know, he could be just dangerous or if not, you know, maybe more dangerous to some of these champions, these so-called champions out here who've been holding these belts and really not willing to defend them against all comers. And, you know, I'm not, you know, trying to disrespect anybody, but truth be told, I mean, guys holding the belt for years. Come on, man. It's time to try to unify or do something special to, you know, to step to the plate, be something more than just a so-called world champion in the cruiserweight division. I mean, I've seen, I will give it to Marco Huck that he did go up to heavyweight and try to fight for Povetkin, but come on, man, do something a little more than that. Fight someone that's deserving a cruiserweight.
Speak for him.
You know, speaking of Marco Huck, he just had his third fight with Olav Pahlavi,
Exactly.
In which he actually fought a much more intelligent, more tactical fight. And this was a more, I guess, a resounding victory for him. The first
right.
two fights with Olav were very controversial, in which a lot
right.
of people felt that Olav Falabi deserved the victory both times.
Right.
Marco Hook, he's been a champion now, a title holder for a while in the cruiserweight division. What
mm-hmm.
were your thoughts on his performance, and what do you think that you would happen if Eddie Chambers got that big fight with Marco Hook?
Well, I mean, he obviously fought a lot better of a fight, you know what I mean? And you know, to get the victory and, you know, not be so controversial like as the last two. I mean, obviously, he did a much better job. I didn't see much of it, but, I, you know, some of the things I've seen were, you know, a bit impressive. So, but impressive for him. It was just like what I was saying with Tomas Adonis. It's being honest, you know. It's like when I said with Tomas, a lot of people say, oh, Tomas is just as good a boxer, and he's a good boxer. Like, no, Tomas is forced to be a boxer, not necessarily a great boxer or a great talented boxer with all of the, you know, the trimmings. No, he had to box. Moving up to the heavyweight division from light heavyweight, though he's a, you know, fairly big guy, 6'3", you know what I mean, 225, he's still small for the heavyweight division and is coming up for 175. So he's not going to be standing in front of those guys trying to bang them and knock them out, because that's not going to happen. He's not. He doesn't have that kind of power at heavyweight. So he's forced to box. Same thing when you look at a guy like Marco Hook. Now, against the competition, if some of these guys he's faced in Olav Falabi, I mean, I'm not saying that Olav, you know, is not a good boxer, not, doesn't have any real technical ability or whatever, but he can do those things against that kind of competition. What happens when he gets in there with somebody who's a pure boxer, really knows how to box, and can, you know, do all that's necessary and just completely dominate him on that end? Then what does he do? And then if he tries to, you know, go in and maul someone like myself, it's going to be a little difficult, because I'm pretty strong and I've been fighting big, you know, super big guys for most of my career. You know what I mean? So it's a bit different. You know, I'm not trying to say the guy can't fight, the guy can't box, but I'm just trying to say that it's a different when you get in there with a level of competition, you know, as far as a boxer like myself, like the guys like you know, Roy Jones in his prime. I'm not trying to say that that kind of a boxer, but, you know, but those kind of guys, you know, make it a little bit difficult for you to think you could stand in there and actually box with them. So I would like to see him in that kind of a fight, somebody who can really box.
You know, what's amazing was when you first decided to make the move to fight in the cruiserweight division, you know, I would have thought, in fact, I would have probably bet my house that a lot of these cruiserweight title holders would have been jumping at the chance to prove themselves against a perennial contender in the heavyweight division. And for some reason, you're suffering from the same issues that you did in the heavyweight division, that you're viewed as too much risk for the reward. How
right.
do you shake this, Eddie?
Well, it's going to be tough. I mean, it's always going to be that way for me. You know what I mean? There's no way that even – see, my popularity even in the heavyweight division – well, not that even in it. My popularity in the heavyweight division wasn't as such, because I was so small, you know what I mean? But now, you know what I mean? But, you know, the success I had was, you know, it was good. I was, you know, I was happy to be at the level I was. But now I'm going on in the cruiserweight division. You would expect people like this to just jump at the chance and say, hey, this is a guy that was a, you know, top-level contender right on the doorstep of being world champion at heavyweight. Why not take a chance and jump in there and prove that we are really credible down here at the cruiserweight division? But like you said, also, it's too much risk, not enough reward. Although I have that kind of name in the heavyweight division, but it's in boxing circles. It's not through the lay fans. You know what I mean? Even in Germany, I'm a, you know, fairly decent name in Germany, but I'm no, you can't speak of me in the same conversation as far as popularity over there as you do with some of the other cruiserweight champions that are based out there. So what's the point in going and trying to make a fight like that where you're almost sure to lose their title and not make a seven figures or even high sixes in those fights, especially at cruiserweight? So it's like, you know what, let's fight a bunch of guys that we, you know, let's make three fights with Olav a lot. Now, I'm not saying he's not an incredible fighter, because like you said, there was controversy in both the two fights with Marco Huck and him, the other first two fights. But why do, well, I say, okay, well, I'm not going to fight Olaf third time, and then you see how he beat him this time. I'll fight Chambers and bring him over here and take a serious risk at losing my title.
Well,
almost, I'm saying he's, you know, he's probably was sure to lose it. You know what I mean? Then and not get the pay for it. He'll get the credibility. You know what I mean, for doing it. But that's it. Is it really worth it for them?
Yeah, you know, it's a difficult quandary for you. So let me ask you, if you don't mind, what is the plan of action that Miss Kathy Duva has for Mr. Eddie Chambers for the remainder of 2013?
Oh, man, the only thing we really can do, honestly, is try to force people's hand. You know what I mean? Like, try to get some money. That's what the purpose is of fighting this guy. I mean, he's a relative unknown, but he could be a tough, interesting challenge. You know what I mean? And give people an opportunity to see. And then also, you know, go out here and look good. You know, maybe land a big shot and show that I can punch, you know, I can punch hard enough to hurt people my size. You know what I mean? Most people don't think I can. That I hit hard at all because I've been fighting guys 290 pounds my whole career. So it's kind of difficult to prove when you got those big heads. You got guys with 90-pound heads versus guys with a normal 20-pound head. You know what I mean? So, but now is an opportunity to prove that not only can I box, but I have enough power to hurt people. They just have to be my size.
Oh, you know, we can't wait till you get the big fights that you deserve. I mean, you know, when you were in the heavyweight division, you know, I guess before your injury, you were ranked as high as number 4 in the heavyweight division, according to Ring Magazine. And you look at the landscape in the cruiserweight division, there's a lot of talent there. There are a lot of really great fights that could be made. And there's one name that's coming back, and there's a very good chance that he's going to be featured on the show next week. And we're referring to the Magic Man, Antonio Tarver. What is the possibility of a super fight between Antonio Tarver and Eddie Chambers, my friend?
Oh, man, I'm always looking for good challenges like that one. Antonio Tarver has a great name in boxing. He's one of the few. He's one of the, you know, and I'll say more in his prime time, one of the few to give Roy Jones real problems and actually knock him out. So, I mean, his name still is pretty relevant in boxing. So that is obviously an opportunity that I would jump at. So, you know, like I said, I'm not going to run from any challenge, especially when it's hard to get fights anyway. You know what I mean? Beggars can't be choosers. You know what I mean? So I got to just take not so much what they're offering and just jump and just take anything. But, you know, that's a great fight. And it can be done on American soil, and I think it can sell.
Absolutely. Mason the Line Dixon versus Fast Eddie Chambers.
Yeah.
You got to love the sound of that, man.
Yeah, that's another thing. Yeah, he got that popularity from that too. Oh yeah, we definitely need to make something happen.
Mason the Line Dixon, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, Sly Stallone, brother.
I love it.
But you know, you look at, what were your thoughts? I mean, you look at Guillermo Jones. You know, this is a gentleman who's been largely inactive, and the reason why was because of his promoter. Currently, he's with Don King, and Don is at the point of his career where he only puts together, like, maybe 4 or 5 events every year, if that.
Right.
And you had a guy who was dormant since 2011.
Mm-hmm.
He comes on, and he looks like a very well-preserved gentleman in his 40s.
Right.
What are your thoughts on a possible fight for the WBA world title with Eddie Chambers? I mean, what are your thoughts on possibly facing Guillermo Jones?
Well, that is it's a world title on the line. Can't say a world title shot. You know what I mean? And he's a bit, he's similar in size to some of the heavyweights I'm used to fighting as far as the height. But, I mean, he's still at the same weight, but it doesn't matter. I really wouldn't care. I would love that opportunity for a cruiserweight championship. Oh, man, absolutely, absolutely. And he looked good, so a victory there would really, really cement, you know, me as more than just a quality cruiserweight, but probably one of the best, obviously. Most people think that now, but I feel like I have to prove it. You know what I mean? And once I get an opportunity to do that, once I get a fight, you know what I mean, then I can actually show the people that I can be more than just a dominant cruiserweight, but even going back up to heavyweight and you know, do some great work there as well.
You know, what's amazing is, and unfortunately we're running out of time here, but, you know, you look at all of the big fights that could be made in the cruiserweight division, but we are seeing on June 22nd, Jonathan Banks versus Seth Mitchell.
Oh, yeah.
What are your thoughts on possibly, is there a possibility of you moving back to the heavyweight division if you're given the opportunity to fight the winner of this impactful bout on June 22nd?
Oh, man, talk about opportunity. That would be great. I mean, the first fight was, most people felt like it was an upset. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that that it wasn't a bit of an upset, but I know John, so I know what he's capable of. Seth Mitchell was a good young, well, he's not young, but as far as in his boxing years, he's young.
Mm-hmm.
Prospect, so, I mean, he got a lesson. You know what I mean? And I'm just going to be quite honest, and I just don't think it's going to be much different the second fight, but, hey, I've been proven wrong before. So, you know, but I would love the opportunity to, you know, fight the winner. Now, John Banks is a guy I've worked with in the past. He's actually is in last camp with me, and he's a really, really good boxer. And he's also, you know, a good friend also, you know what I mean? But business is business, and I'm sure he would feel the same way. And the opportunity of a fight with either of those guys is welcome. And I'm pretty sure when we say, oh, we're friends and all that, you look at the situation with how much we're going to be able to make off of something like that. It's an HBO-worthy fight. I think we would slap each other if one of us decided to say, hey, I'm not going to do that. That's my friend. You know what I mean?
I tell you what, Eddie, it's always a pleasure to feature you on the Pugilist Corner, brother, and unfortunately, time flies whenever you're on the air, my friend. We love speaking with you, and I tell you what, we hope to have you back very soon. But, guys,
oh, yeah.
He is coming back. He's going to be in the squared circle once again. August 3rd at the Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut. So if you're in the area, please get your ticket. If you can't make it, it's going to be shown on NBC Sports Network. Eddie, it's going to be a sight for sore eyes to see you back in the ring, my friend. So good luck in your preparation for this fight. We can't wait to see you come back. But we need you back on the Pugilist Corner as soon as possible. Time
Absolutely.
Is just too short when you're on, brother. So thank you so much for being on the air tonight.
Okay, no, it's no problem, man. I appreciate you guys having me. You know, it's always a pleasure for me. So as soon as you need me back on, as soon as you want to get back on and talk about the fight as it nears closer, I'm definitely available. Just phone
call.
We'll
definitely have you back on before your big comeback August 3rd. Thank you so much for being on the Pugilist Corner, sir, and you have a good evening.
You too, sir. I'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Guys, that was the very, very capable, always entertaining Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. We can't wait to see him return to the ring August 3rd at the Mohegan Sun Casino in Uncasville, Connecticut. JK is our next guest in the queue, sir.
Yes, sir. Fresh off his victory, Mr. Jermell Charlo. Proper introductions, please, for Twin Charlo.
Guys, it is always a pleasure to welcome this gentleman to the Pugilist Corner, the newly crowned USBA Junior Middleweight Champion, the Iron Man, 21-0, 10 knockouts, Mr. Jermell Charlo. Jermell, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Just having dinner with the family.
Yeah. Well, you know, we really appreciate you taking time out. We apologize that we're gosh, it seems that we're encumbering on your dinner plans. We apologize for that, but thank you for taking time out for your fans on the Pugilist Corner. First of all, what was it like to open up this very impactful triple header and to fight in front of almost 9,000 fans at the Home Depot Center? What was that like, my friend?
It was an honor, you know, to open up the card. I really, you know, wasn't focused on the 9,000 people that was there. My objective was to focus on beating Demetri Hopkins, which is a nephew of Bernard Hopkins, which is a partner of De La Hoya, which is De La Hoya's the company I work for. So I had a lot of pressure. I knew that it wouldn't be an easy walk on the park, and if I wasn't going to put the pressure in, it could have been a possibility of me losing the fight because of all of the status that he had. And I didn't want to leave it to the judges, but unfortunately I did. It worked in my favor because I dominated the majority of the round. I didn't see it being as close as they had it. You know, they had it 15-13. I thought he only won about three rounds.
Yeah, you know, that's the way it seemed to us as well, Jermell. You know, and when you look at the style matchup, it's pretty obvious that, you know, Al Haymon, Golden Boy, all of your handlers put you in this fight because it was an opportunity to become the USBA junior middleweight champion. But when you look at the style matchup, two boxers pitted against each other, this is not the best possible style matchup for you. Did you realize that going in? Did you and Ronnie realize that going into this fight?
Well, we knew that he was going to do a little bit of, you know, me and Ronnie really focused on this camp of him being dirty. You know, we focused on him doing things that was going to, like, you know, I'm going to have to work on the inside and I'm going to get hit with a couple shots to the leg, which I did, you know, and I'm glad that I worked on that because I was able to just walk off like it was nothing. But, you know, we didn't necessarily think that he would run away from me the way he did, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just, you know, I'm astounded by, you know, the victory. I'm happy, you know. I wish they would have shown my ring entrance walkout because, you know, right now my focus is completely different than it was before.
I wish they would have shown my ring entrance, my walkout.
Yeah, my walkout.
So, I mean, you know, it seemed a little odd that you guys were already in the center of the ring when the broadcast actually started. Why do you think that happened that way?
Well, because it was a triple header. It was a triple header, and so they wanted to just put the fight on. And you know, I don't know. I don't know what it was. But it was fine to me. No matter what, you know, I didn't like the fact that I wasn't known first. Normally, I'm a Golden Boy fighter, so I'm used to being the champion and facing the challenger. But in this particular incident, I was actually the challenger, so that made the stakes higher for me and made me have to prove a point.
Wow, you know, that's something that's a little different for you. I mean, yeah, you've been pretty much the A side for every single one of your bouts leading into this. Do you think that had an effect on you mentally during the fight?
No, not at all. Man, during the fight, I was so comfortable. I was, you know, only a couple things bothered me a little bit. I don't even want to tell nobody. I'm not going to tell nobody that during the fight, you know. Other than that, I mean, I felt like, you know, they were trying to play mind games. And then not seeing Richardson coming to the dressing room, trying to, you know, not seeing Richardson was coming to the dressing room telling me about my gloves. He was stood right next to me, watching me warm up. Not seeing Richardson, he was just being a problem. And I felt like that was just a mental thing that he was trying to do. But, hey, this is the professional world. Ronnie is a professional coach. There's no way I can see. You know, there's no way that, you know, anything, you know. He was complaining about the way I warmed up.
Wow.
Yeah.
How could you possibly have a complaint as to how a fighter is warming up? That makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Were you and Ronnie talking about that before the fight?
My performance coach, Danny Arnold, got upset. You know,
that's not true, though.
Talk. I'm sorry. Can you repeat your response, Jermell?
Yeah, I heard some guys talking. Hello, how you doing? And, by the way, not seeing Richardson. You know, he came in the dressing room. The way I warmed up, we use a complex unit that stimulates your legs, because my legs, you know, I remember you guys heard it before. You know, your legs get these leg cramps because, you know, you lose a little weight and you hydrate yourself back. So, you know, and I was doing – I trained all the way until Thursday. Just because I was fighting on Saturday doesn't mean that I want to give my body a break. All I did was kind of, like, massage my muscles and stuff. And so I did a little stimulation in the locker room whenever I was getting ready. If you know what stimulation is, I told Nassim Richardson, he could sit on next to me and do the exact same thing I'm doing, and maybe he'll feel good going into the fight, you know. But – you know, it was cool. I didn't take no big deal. It was nothing. Showtime came back and said, "Hey, what is going on?" Everybody came in the dressing room, commissioners, and so I'm like, "What are these dudes interrupting us for? Is that like a mental thing?" So it was, you know. Listen, you know, it's kind of weird, but I never do this. I was listening to my coach and Nassim Richardson during the whole fight. Not to mention that we had three or four fight crowd breakouts that. Thank God for my clear eyes, I was able to kind of, like, look at through my peripherals. So there's a lot of different things that, you know, like I said, I don't want to really bring it up. Ronnie Shields would get mad at me. But, it was an honor. It was a good fight.
You know, yeah, so do you think that this fight, I mean, is that what you're taking away from this? Obviously, you became the USBA title holder in the junior middleweight division. This puts you in line for much bigger, more impactful bouts. But, you know, the mental adversity that you had to go through, is that what you're taking away from this experience?
Absolutely. It was just a little bit of mental adversity. It wasn't as serious. I've been through so much in my life that, you know, something like this is just an eye-opener, something you got to look at, you know. This whole fight was something different and weird about it. You know, I didn't really focus in on too much of that. I did what I had to do. I was trying to engage. A lot of fans and folks that really don't know about boxing was writing me, telling me, "Oh, that fight put me to sleep. It was boring, this and that." Dude, there's nothing I can do. If this dude would sit in the middle of the ring and trade punches with me, yeah, it was a battle of jabs. who has the best jab? Of course, I was trying to show that I have the best jab. I have the best right hand. He wouldn't dare sit there and take a right hand from me. I don't think nobody in the junior middleweight division would, you know? And I understand, but even when I was trying to pressure, even when I allowed him, you know, and that's what kind of got me out of my game plan a little bit. He was a, you know, a guy that ran a little bit too much. He didn't want to engage in no contact. If I could, I would have stopped him the whole round. He would have just threw jabs and fling the right hand out there. And that's it, you know. And that's what made the fight so boring, you know. I didn't get tired at all. I was ready to fight, you know. There's nothing I could do about that. So to all of the fans that don't really understand, they need to go talk to Bernard Hopkins or Demetrius Hopkins and find out why he didn't want to engage. It's not my fault.
You know, that's a really intriguing point that you bring up, you know, because even though you were considered the challenger in this situation, it almost seems like the onus was placed on your shoulders to make the fight entertaining. Is that how it felt during the fight?
Exactly. And my coach put a lot of pressure on me because he knows my ability. He knew that, Jermell, you know, you work too hard, you come too far, you know, don't allow this to slip away from me. And I was like, Ronnie, then I come back to the corner, I'm like, yo, all I'm getting from this guy is a couple headbutts and some scratching from his gloves and some hits on the hips. I'm trying to do everything I can. Dude, I remember
stalking down like a Mexican Angulo, just trying to come to fight. Like, you know, in the, I got my own style. I'm not gonna fight just like him. So it was just weird, you know. I try to make a fight, you know. But they put a lot of pressure on me because I am the undefeated fighter. But not to mention he only has 2 losses. So I mean his record doesn't look that bad. I mean I did what I had to do.
You know, yeah, absolutely. You know, and I spoke about this with Ronnie on Sunday's show. And in the immortal words of Mr. Georgie Benton, win today, look good tomorrow. So what does the future hold for Mr. Jermell Charlo? Have you spoken with Mr. Al Haymon as far as when you're going to step in the ring next?
I'm not an Al Haymon fighter. I'm under Josh Dubin. And,
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. There's no problem. My brother's with Al Haymon. We have a good relationship. Al Haymon, at one point, I guess, didn't really see the interest in me. We did get offers from him. He did possibly try to work with us, but at that time, Al Haymon was caught up in something else, and I can understand the business. And my next, I'll be looking at a couple fighters. I do have the IBF. USBA title now, so that puts me in line to fight Ishak Smith or Carlos Molina. And I guarantee you, if that fight happens for me, I'll be the new IBF champion. I'll be able to sit back with my family and be happy and take care of my son with another title. And you know,
that's great,
living my life, man.
That is great, brother. You know, and this is happening rather quickly for you. I know a lot of people are stating, well, he's got 21 victories. He's been in the boxing industry for a while now. It's time to start moving him up. But you look at your age. This is happening rather quickly. Are you ready for the big time, Jermell?
Absolutely, I'm ready. I'm ready. If the Lord say the same, the end of this year, I have one of the major title belts. Okay, I'm gonna work hard for it. I'm gonna continue to push. I'm going to continue to do what I have to do in and outside the ring and live my life right and possibly be the next champion.
Well, I tell you what, man, that's something we all look forward to, and it couldn't happen to a better guy. And we appreciate you taking this time out and from being with your family. So we'll allow you to go ahead and enjoy the rest of your evening with your family. But thank you so much for taking this time out and visiting with all of your fans here on the Pugilist Corner. We really appreciate all of your time tonight, and congratulations for becoming the new USBA Junior Middleweight Champion, sir, and we look forward to seeing your career blossom in 2013-2014, my friend.
Thanks so much, and I appreciate it. I'll be back on the show.
Awesome. We love having you, brother. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your evening, my friend.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, guys, that was the always, always astute Mr. Jermell Charlo. We look forward to seeing he and his brother both become stalwarts in the junior middleweight division. The talent is there. They just need the opportunity. JK, who is in the queue, sir? JK, are you there, sir? James, are you there, sir? Well, I guess while he's actually getting our next guest in the queue, we will discuss, because we didn't really get very much time to actually discuss this this fight. That's gonna be, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Popular introductions, please, for the Twitter King and the new champion, Mr. Paul Malignaggi.
Guys, it is always an honor to feature 2-division world champion and the current WBA welterweight champion of the world, the Magic Man, Mr. Pauly Malignaggi. Pauly, how are you doing this evening, sir?
I'm cool, man. How you guys doing?
Well, I tell you what, brother, we cannot wait till June 22nd. This has turned into one of the more highly anticipated events of the boxing calendar year 2013, and in large part because of all of the seemingly bad blood between you and Mr. Adrian Broner. You know, when this fight was first made by Eric Gomez and Richard Schaefer and company, did you have any idea that it would actually turn into this, leading into this fight?
You don't know what to expect, you know, with a kid like Broner. He's got a tendency to talk a lot, you know, and he thinks, you know, I guess he thinks not everybody's going to talk back to him like the way I'm able to or the way I usually do. So, you know, I knew there was potential for it to get kind of ugly, but, you know, you just don't know what to expect.
You know, what's amazing is, yeah, I was just going to say it's, you know, I've never heard anyone get the better of you in any kind of verbal exchange. You know, didn't he have any idea that this was coming, that he was bringing the maelstrom on him?
Well, no, I guess not. He's not a very intelligent kid, nor is he very bright. So, you know, I think he went into it blindly thinking he was just going to talk and he wasn't going to be made to look like a fool. But you know, he's been made to look like a fool throughout the promotion. And on next Saturday night, the 22nd, he's going to be made to look like a fool in the ring, too.
Wow. You know, and this is very interesting because, you know, as we're listening to critics, you know, and listening to their opinions going into this fight, a lot of people are starting to put money on you, Paulie. They're actually using the logic. You know, Adrian's never fought a prolific boxer like yourself, a guy that uses a lot of upper body, good footwork, has great balance, a guy who's been in the ring with the biggest names in their respective divisions. You know, is that going to be the case? Is that the deciding factor in this fight?
Yeah, I think it's a big factor for sure. You know, it's a situation where you can you definitely bank on my experience giving him a lot of problems.
You know, you look at the style matchup here, and yeah, if there's any, and I've been saying this for years, if you ever fought a guy like Floyd Mayweather, I think your footwork, your upper body movement, just how ring savvy you are, I think that would be a tremendous matchup, and I think that would be a very tough fight for Floyd. And I feel the same way about this fight. Was he a little surprised when you guys went face-to-face? Was he a little surprised at your physical size?
I'm not sure. You know, that only goes so far at the end of the day. You know, I'm a bigger man than him. I don't know if they thought I was that small of a welterweight, but, you know, face-to-face, I think that we saw the bigger man was. The only reason he looked so big in the first press conference is because he was way overweight. But face-to-face, he's a little guy. He's a short guy. And he's in some deep problems next week because I had a good camp and I'm very sharp.
Wow. So, you know, let's talk about that because this is – a lot of people would look at this as being a potential problem. I mean, you're a great color commentator, you know, and a lot of critics have hailed you as the best color commentator in boxing – a position that you've embraced wholeheartedly, but has this been a detriment to your preparation for one of the biggest fights of your career, a tough test against an undefeated guy?
No, not at all. I enjoy doing the commentating. I don't lose focus. It actually keeps me more focused, you know, being around that kind of atmosphere, knowing that kind of atmosphere is awaiting me on my fight night. So it's been a blessing.
You know, what's amazing is this almost looks like a road show. You know, for you, and you know, how has this experience been for you, going from city to city, you know, meeting all of these great people, and how has the reception been as far as your career as a color commentator?
It's been very cool. It's been it's been fun, and I have people for the most part enjoy my color commentating, and you know, give me a lot of praise and congratulate me on it. So you know, it's been cool.
You know, what's amazing is I couldn't believe this, you know, looking at the whole promotion of this event, it started back in Brooklyn, you know, in the weigh-in, I guess, for the Zab Judah Danny Garcia bout, and it got really ugly really quickly. Why on earth did he bring up your love life to help promote this event? I just didn't understand that one bit. And do you understand any of that?
With what?
Adrian Broner bringing up your love life in the middle of this,
I don't know. I mean, if it was a real ex-girlfriend, I could see it maybe him thinking that, you know, it would get in my head. I mean, unless he really believes it was an ex-girlfriend of mine, which then, okay, then I can see that. But you know, the fact that it wasn't an ex-girlfriend, it was just a girl I had slept with. I slept with many girls, so the odds are there's going to be other people that I've slept with that have those many girls, but I've probably been with more women than he's got hairs on his head. You know, so, you know, it's not a situation where it really was the end of the world, you know, but it irked me a little bit because he gave that person the a platform to continue to lie about it. So, you know, that was what made it irritating. It wasn't so much for him. It was so much for the female counterpart, you know, then taking that little free ride and then going with it, you know.
You know, it just seems like it's really inappropriate, you know, but, you know, credit to you, man. You made the most of it. And do you think that really took him by surprise?
It would be inappropriate if it was an ex-girlfriend. I really don't find a problem with it if it's just a random girl. Just aside from the fact that the random girl got a free ride and had 5 minutes of fame. That's the only problem I have with it, you know. Somebody doesn't deserve, you know, even a minute of fame got 5 minutes of fame, but. I mean, if it was an ex-girlfriend, I'd say, yeah, it's pretty inappropriate. But it wasn't an ex-girlfriend, so, I mean, all power to him.
Well, what's amazing is that the promotion of this has been so amazing as far as the heat between, you know, the heated exchanges verbally between the both of you guys. There's a fight that's happening this Saturday, and it's amazing. This is for a world title. This is Mikey Garcia's first title defense, and no one's really buzzing about it. Everyone is already buzzing about Adrian Broner versus Paulie Malignaggi for the WBA welterweight title. You know, did you actually expect this?
Yeah, I felt this was going to be a big fight. So none of this is surprising to me. I felt like this was going to be a big fight.
You know what's amazing is, I mean, because you're seemingly at the twilight of your career, you're a fight veteran, you've been doing this for seemingly forever. I mean, you're a real professional, and this is a great matchup. You know, is this the reason why you're still in boxing, just for matchups like this? Does this really motivate you, fights like this?
Yeah, exactly. It motivates me and gets my adrenaline rushing, and it gives me a reason to want to train hard.
You know, what's amazing is that, yeah, you look at fights of this caliber, you know, and people, your critics, a lot of your critics have stated, well, every single time ever he's had to step up and fight the perceived elite, he's come up short for one reason or another. Do you feel that this fight is going to make everyone rethink how they view Paulie Malignaggi?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think it's a fight where, you know, you kind of have to give me credit once. And I beat him, but I'm sure people will figure out a way not to. But in the end, you know, it'll just be another feather on my cap, you know?
You know, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I think it's going to be a tremendous fight, guys. It's happening on Showtime, June 22nd. Now, we want to speak to you now, Paulie, as a color commentator, and we want to get your thoughts on the fight that was just announced, Floyd Mayweather versus Canelo Alvarez. You had the privilege of calling these last two fights, respectively, from both fighters. What are your thoughts on this incredible matchup, and what should the fans expect on September 14th, my friend?
I think it's the biggest fight boxing can make right now. It's interesting. You know, Mayweather is definitely the better fighter, but Canelo has the size and may know how to use it, so I expect a good fight.
You know, what's amazing is that Canelo Alvarez, a lot of people were really shocked at his defensive prowess and his technical ability that he displayed against a really ring-savvy guy like Austin Trout. Were you a little surprised when you saw that unfold in San Antonio, Texas? And is he going to need every bit of that against a real ring veteran and the pound-for-pound king, Floyd Mayweather?
I wasn't surprised. I think Canelo is very talented, and he's getting better each time, but I was in the arena that night, and the ring, you know, the little things people set up to kind of make things happen their way, the promotion, you know, it's funny because the ring, when I touched the canvas, it was like quicksand, so it was tough to maneuver for anybody in that ring. So I think it affected Austin Trout a little bit more. So it may have made Canelo look more slick and defensive, but you just don't know, because Canelo is a good fighter, and he's a strong fighter, and he's an improving fighter.
You know, what's amazing is that Canelo, you know, the blueprint seems to be, well, I can't really call it a blueprint because no one's ever defeated Floyd Mayweather, but it seems that his opponents, the ones who have made it I guess, a much more competitive fight, seem to be able to put pressure on. They're effective aggressors. You know, they throw a lot of punches. They're able to fight well on the inside. Canelo's not really that type of fighter. Do you think this is he's going to try to adopt that mentality, or what do you think his game plan is going to be going into the biggest fight of his career?
I think he has to be physical. I think he has to, impose some size on him.
You know, it's really, really difficult picturing that because he's a guy who fights a lot like, I want to say, Juan Manuel Marquez, Oscar De La Hoya. He's a guy who I call a pocket banger, where he's a great counterpuncher. He's very explosive. But I don't think we've ever seen a really effective, aggressive version of Canelo Alvarez. You know, is he capable of doing that?
Yeah, well, you know, he's going to have to adjust the game plan. You know, you have to adjust the opponent, so he's going to have to do something about that and become aggressive, I think. I don't think he can sit back and box with Floyd Mayweather.
You're absolutely right. You know, and talk about the catchweight at 152. You know, Canelo, he's had trouble in his last two fights making 154. You know, is he capable of making 152 at this point in his career? Do you see this being a huge detriment for him in the fight?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of an issue, but I don't think it's that big of an issue. I think Canelo is young enough to where he can get himself down in weight and still be strong. You recover better when you're that age.
You know, we look forward to seeing that September 14th. You know, if we could, just for a little bit longer, if we could talk to you about the possibly upcoming fight that should be made for the fall or maybe the winter, Danny Garcia versus Lucas Matisse. This is a fight that the fight fans really want to see. This is going to decide supremacy at 140. What are your thoughts, and who has the advantage going into this very impactful fight at junior welter?
I think it has a lot of potential. I think it has the potential to be a big fight, a violent fight, a sudden ending for either guy. I think it's a good fight, and it's an exciting fight for people to look forward to.
You know, what's amazing, this seems to be because both of these guys are home run hitters. You know, this is a huge fight. I mean, at least it has that potential. But is this matchup matured to the point where it's going to get the kind of billing that it deserves? What are your thoughts on that in the business side of boxing?
I think the fight should have happened a year ago. The fact that it waited a year, I think it's matured long enough. I think it's a good time to make it.
Wow. You know, and it seems that the winner of this fight, what's going to decide the winner is who has the better chin in this situation. In your mind, who has the better chin in this? Because both guys can end the fight with one shot. We've seen that both guys' respective careers. Who has the better chin in this scenario, Paulie?
Both guys have a big punch, and both guys have a good chin, so it'll be interesting. It's hard to call. It really is. It's one of those fights where you want to watch it, you think it could be a really good fight, or it could end in one round. So those kind of fights, you just can't blink at any point.
You know, that's absolutely incredible, man. And, you know, quite honestly, we can't wait to see it, and we hope that it actually materializes very quickly. It seems to be a done deal, according to Golden Boy and Showtime. But let me ask you, you know, and this is the last line of questioning I'm going to offer you. Eric Gomez, we've seen his maturity over the years. What's amazing is I think he is turning into a terrific matchmaker. Obviously, he saw Paulie Malignaggi versus Adrian Broner before anyone even fathomed that idea. You know, how do you think Eric Gomez has matured as far as being a top matchmaker in the sport?
Oh, he's made some great matches. I think it's his body of work speaks for itself. It's top level, and I think it's only going to get better. He's with a great company, and he's involved with great fighters, and he knows how to match them up for great fights.
You know, because that's really difficult. Most people don't realize how difficult it is, not just coming up with the idea for a great fight, but also being a salesperson and selling the idea to both camps. You know, how difficult is that of a task in the industry of boxing?
Well, it's very difficult. You know, you have to be able to sell the fight. You have to have a matchmaker that knows what fights to make in order to make them the most exciting. You know, it's a business.
You know, yeah, absolutely. And most people forget about that. The fans, especially, they don't even want to think about the business side of boxing. But unfortunately, that's the way it is. And there's a lot of pressure on these fighters to make the best fights possible and to step in against the toughest opposition available. And not only that, but to be entertaining. You know, when it comes time to step in the ring, do you feel that pressure time in and time out, Pauly, that you have to put forth an entertaining effort?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got your fans, their money's worth, but winning is the most important thing. But definitely entertaining fans is also important.
You know, so last question, Pauly, before we let you go. You're seemingly at the twilight of your career. How much longer, and you already have another career that you're great at, the color commentary thing. I don't see an end there in sight, but how much longer should the fans be able to expect to see you in the squared circle competing at this level?
I'd say I'll retire in the next 2 years, the most, you know, no more than 2 years, but we'll see. I take it fight by fight, you know. The situation where, you know, I haven't lost in 3 years, and I'm enjoying my time at the top once again. So I don't want it to end, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see how things go play out in the next couple of years. But even at the most, I don't see it more than happening more than 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a great career, you know, in the commentary booth, and everyone seems to really enjoy that. So please give our fans and your fans who are listening, please give them an idea of what to expect on Saturday, June 22nd in Brooklyn, New York.
If you expect Adrian Broner to win, be ready for a jaw-dropping performance from me. I'm going to hurt him. I'm going to beat him up, and I'm going to hurt him.
Oh, we love it. Guys, the magic man, Pauly Malignaggi. Pauly, thank you so much for all of your time this evening. We look forward to seeing you really put on a great performance. And, man, yeah, we can't wait, brother. And we hope to have you back on the air after you take care of business on June 22nd, my friend.
Sounds good, man. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Pauly, for your time, brother. You have a good evening, sir. Well, guys, that was the magic man, Pauly Malignaggi. He seems focused. He seems like he just wants to get in the ring, take care of business. And, guys, we can't wait to see it again. It's going to be in the main event of the evening, June 22nd, on Showtime, Adrian Broner versus Pauly Malignaggi. Pauly taking on the undefeated, seemingly elite Mr. Adrian Broner, but that raises a lot of questions. You know, Pauly, in the build-up to this event, was actually stating that Adrian Broner has never faced anyone at the level of Pauly Malignaggi. He even went as far as saying that, well, Al Haymon is the one who gave him his two titles at 130 and 135. We'll find out how the drama is going to conclude on June 22nd, spectacular event at Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. We can't wait to see it. But guys, coming up, we are going to speak with... Yes, sir.
Mr. Yes, sir. We're having a few problems here getting the new champ, Mr. Donna Stevenson. But in the meantime, we are blessed to have one of the Hall of Famers promoter, Mr. Don Chargan. Proper introductions, please.
Guys, it is always a genuine privilege to welcome this gentleman back to the show. He's always very entertaining. We love him here on the Pugilist Corner. Welcoming to the show once again, Hall of Fame matchmaker and promoter, the incomparable Warwick, Mr. Don Chargan. Don, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing fine, Joseph. Fine. It's a pleasure to be back on with you.
Well, we love featuring you on the show, sir. You're always full of all of these great stories and great nuggets. So let me ask you, how was your trip to Canastota once again, sir?
Oh, it was fantastic. I look forward, Joseph, every year. It's good. I'm sorry this year my good friend Carmen Basilio no longer with us. But you know, he's the reason that the hall was started there in Canastota, his hometown. He is just idolized there. I mean, it's a small village, actually, but everybody knows Carmen. Everybody. And this is, you know, it felt funny without him.
Yeah, yeah, you know, God bless him, you know. That's right. That's the reason why they put it in Canastota now, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And
wow,
it just gets better every year, and I'm looking forward already because next year is going to be huge. I'll just give you three of the names that will be eligible next year. Oscar De La Hoya, Felix Trinidad,
wow,
and Joe Calzaghe.
Wow.
That's
that
just three of them.
Very special. My goodness.
Because, as you know, as a fighter, you have to be retired for at least 5 years before you can enter the Hall of Fame. So.
You know, has it really been that long, Don? Five years since we've seen Joe Calzaghe and Oscar De La Hoya grace the ring ropes.
Right. It's been five. It'll be 5 years next year for the in 2014.
Wow, that is insane. Two of the most exciting fighters of this era, Joe Calzaghe and Oscar De La Hoya. And, yeah, you're absolutely right. They're shoo-ins for the International Boxing Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My goodness. Well, you know, tell us, what was it like seeing Jimmy Lennon Jr. being inducted? And quite honestly, as a new ring announcer, I'm actually going to be announcing in my second event on June 22nd here in San Antonio, Texas. I'm going to be the ring announcer for a South Coast Promotions event. I can't wait. And it's funny, when preparing for something like this, I listen to everybody. I'm a huge fan of all of the prolific ring announcers throughout history, and two of my favorite. And this is somewhat, a lot of people have accused me that I sound closely, I sound a lot like both of these guys when I do this. And that's Jimmy Lennon, the great Jimmy Lennon, and his son, now Hall of Famer, Jimmy Lennon Jr. How was it basically to see this gentleman just as a kid, growing up, and now he's in the International Boxing Hall of Fame? How special was that for you to see this?
Oh, it was wonderful. I saw Jimmy there and his beautiful mother, 91 years old, and I'll tell you, she's still good. You know, she was an opera singer. That whole Lennon family is so talented. You know, their nieces were the Lennon sisters from the Lawrence Welk era, and they're just talented, and what wonderful people. And I've known Jimmy Jr. since he's been a little kid. He used to, and his dad, you know, we had some fantastic riots at the Olympic in my 20 years there. And Jimmy Lennon Sr. had a way that he could quell a riot. I'll never forget, we had one, a Mexican fighter. They thought he got robbed on a decision. And, oh, they started throwing things and tearing up the seats and all that. Jimmy braved all that, got in the center of the ring, and I asked him later, and he don't know why he picked the song. He sang Amapola, and everybody stopped throwing things. But he stopped the riot.
Wow, but yeah, that's how special Jimmy Lennon was in commanding the attention of everyone. I mean,
I'll give you another trivia on Jimmy Sr. He was the first announcer, he introduced the tuxedo to announcers.
Wow, really?
Yep,
yeah,
he
was your ring announcer.
The first one. They used to wear suits and that, but he had the tuxedo.
That's amazing. And he was your ring announcer at the Olympic Auditorium
when
you were there
for
20 years, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was there the 20 years that the 20 years I was there, he was the announcer.
Wow. So, in your opinion, how is Jimmy Lennon Jr.? How is the kid, you know, those are some large shoes to fill, Don.
It is, but I'll tell you, you close your eyes and you think it's Jimmy Sr.
That's
and
amazing.
Jimmy Senior made many, many movies also, where
That's
he
right.
played either a singer or an announcer.
Wow. You know, that's amazing, and you're absolutely right. It sounds, it's a spitting image. It sounds exactly like his dad. And, you know, he's got that old-time boxing delivery, something that you really don't hear anymore.
No, I think I was just so happy for the Lennon family that he was there with his mother, his wife, and two sons, and that was really great, and we were cutting up touches about his dad and different stories and that. And it was just a fun weekend. And to show you that the gods look down on the Hall of Fame, it rained hard every day. And the day of the induction ceremonies and the parade, the sun came out and it was 80 degrees. And several hours after the parade and induction ceremonies, it started raining again. But not one drop fell during the parade.
Oh, I tell you what, God bless the International Boxing Hall of Fame. I mean, it's you know, because so often, this is a, you know, especially for what you do, Don, it's almost like a thankless profession where fighters, promoters, everyone involved with the sport very seldom gets the kind of recognition they deserve. So once a week, you know, one weekend out of the year, you know, this is the time where we get to herald everyone that's given everything that they have to the sport of boxing. So how special are the weekends like this every year?
I'll tell you, I'm already thinking of next year. It's just, it's wonderful. It's just, you see, and it's the only time you see him. Like, oh, say somebody like a Marvin Hagler. He lives in Italy, but he comes every year to the Hall of Fame.
That's amazing.
And Marvin was one of the many, you know, great ex-champions that fought for me at the Olympic. And, you know, it's really nice. Danny Lopez was there. It's just wonderful to see those people.
You know, absolutely, Don. And please tell us also how moving it was and how dramatic to see Arturo Gatti's daughter
accept
the honor of
really
being inducted into the Hall of Fame.
It was really something. Arturo had Kathy Duva and her people were there. Arturo's brothers and everybody there. They had about 30 or 40 people just for the Gatti bunch there, and it was really good. And an interesting stat on him, he sold out the big Boardwalk Pavilion in Atlantic City 9 times. Nobody
can
make that statement. I mean, fighters that face it, much better fighters than Arturo, never came close to doing that, but 9 times he sold it out.
You know, and it almost makes it laughable that there were a lot of sports writers and boxing critics that felt that Arturo wasn't worthy of being inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I know it. I know it.
Considered everything that he gave to the sport of boxing. It seems pretty laughable now, doesn't it, Don?
Oh, of course, of course. I'll tell you, anybody was there and saw the reception, the second that they mentioned his name, everybody stood up. Now, that doesn't happen all the time. Nobody had told him to. Nobody had just, boom, went throughout the crowd. You got 5,000-6,000 people all standing for Arturo.
Wow. Yeah, the blood and guts warrior. Absolutely. I mean, you know, God rest his soul. He was taken from us too quickly, and he gave us so many great memories in the ring. What an amazing event to be able to share that, Don, with all of your peers and everyone in the boxing industry. That is something really special. You know, so let me ask you, you know, during the dinner, Who are you actually seated with, Don?
I sat, I sat next to another promoter, a close friend of mine, Russell Peltz, Philadelphia. And immediately next to me was the great former lightweight champion, Carlos Ortiz.
That's amazing.
And let's see, next to him was Aaron Pryor. I'm just trying to think. And next to him was Michael Spinks. And next to him was Leon Spinks.
Wow. Gosh. No wonder like going there every year. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. That's, and I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't trade it for the world. That's our industry. That's our Academy Awards.
That's amazing. You know, and when you put it like that, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, was there anything else that was really impactful that really sticks out in your mind? Were there any testimonials, any stories actually that were actually told by any of the former greats of boxing?
You know, they get up and they I'll tell you who was very, very good. I didn't know he could talk like that was Virgil Hill. He got up. He had about 26 people with him. He had wives, ex-wives, children. they had them all, and he was just he was so happy at being inducted that it was just so nice to see somebody that really, really appreciated it.
Yeah, this is the highest honor that boxing can bestow upon any fighter. You know, because this is
Colin
this
Hart,
is
one of the leading boxing writers from London, was inducted. And a great guy. He gave a very, very fine speech.
You know, that's
they had
amazing.
A little Korean fighter that was the light flyweight champion for 6 years. I can't pronounce his name, but he was, if you can call a little fighter cute, he was. He somebody wrote him a little note in English, and everything he would end up with, thank you very much.
Oh, I love it. That is tremendous. You know, Don, we wouldn't have a segment without bringing this up. This is amazing, and quite honestly, we really need to get your thoughts on this because we always value your opinion. We value your insight. You know, we have
I
to
I know
bring
what
up.
You're going
to
ask me.
Of course, the huge event and just the blockbuster fight. It has the...
Well,
I'll
tell you now, being you have such a good show and good listeners, they've assigned me to get sparring partners for Canelo.
Wow.
And
that's
one of
amazing.
The kids I have is somebody that you know. He's originally from Mexico, now in the Valley in Texas, Tito Ramos. I've seen him, and
wow.
He's one of the few fighters that I've seen that can imitate that shoulder roll that Floyd does.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be one of the sparring partners.
You know,
and
honestly, I'm sorry, go ahead, Don.
Yeah, he's 15-0, and a tremendous, tremendous prospect, and he'll be a good sparring partner for Canelo because Canelo's going to need all the help he can get in there with Floyd.
You're absolutely right, but you know that's excellent preparation because you're absolutely right, and he's actually been a sparring partner for Floyd as well.
Yes,
he's one of James Gogi's fighters, and quite honestly, I can't wait to see once he actually gets on that big stage of boxing. Tito Humberto Ramos is a future star of boxing, I'm truly convinced, because,
yes,
yeah, his defensive prowess is absolutely incredible, and he does a very, very effective imitation of Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Mm-hmm, he does.
You know, so that's amazing. So Canelo, we have to talk about the 152-pound catchweight. first of all, what are your thoughts on this? Who is Canelo going to be working with to get him in that proper condition come September 14th?
Well, like I say, I've got 4 fighters that I'm going to send him. 3 plus Tito.
Mm.
I've got Alan Sanchez, a good welterweight prospect. Throws a lot of punches. He'll be good for a change of pace. I've got another change of pace fighter that throws it. Then I have a kid named Jonathan Garcia that is 11-0, tremendous all-around prospect. I think it's one of the best young prospects around. He's got a great left jab, and he'll be with Canelo.
Wow, you know,
and whoever else that they get, he's going to start out and have quite a few fighters and then weed it down to the ones he figures is really helping him.
You know, what's amazing, Don, is we look at the 152-pound catchweight, and we know that Canelo has had some trouble as of late getting down to 154. Do you see this being a potential problem on September 14th?
Not this time, because he was happy with 52. They were worried that it was going to be lower. But
wow.
He says it's no problem. Because,
wow,
you know, he's been pointing for this for a long time. I imagine he's not going to let himself blow up and put on a lot of weight.
No, that's amazing, you know.
To me, it's a very, very interesting fight. I mean, Floyd has got to be the favorite. But here you have a 22-year-old kid with all kind of ability, and he wants the fight. He's wanted the fight even before he was ready. He's wanted the fight for a year and a half.
That's absolutely incredible. You know, yeah, that's all he's been talking about, yeah, for the past year and a half. You know, even though he was faced with the very tough task of Mr. Austin Trout, yeah, he originally wanted Floyd Mayweather Jr. even back then, didn't he?
Yeah, oh, sure he did. I think the Austin Trout is indeed going to help him, his confidence in that. And he knows he was in with a smart fighter that gave him different looks than that, and he was able to handle him. So it really is going to be a very, very interesting fight. And will it draw?
Oof. Yeah, absolutely. This has done the potential of being the most lucrative bout in the
That's
history
right. Well,
of boxing.
Well, they're shooting for $2.5 million. That was the figures for Oscar and Floyd. So it'll be interesting to see.
Oh, absolutely, and we can't wait. September 14th. Now, Don, you look at Canelo. You look at his progression. It's been amazing. He seems to get better and better and show all of his critics something different with each and every performance. Do you feel that this was the right time to make this fight?
Oh, I think so now. 'Cause you know, you remember how I was against it a year ago.
That's
but,
right.
You know, I'm not... Now, I mean, I'm glad they made it. And, you know, you look at it this way. He's 22 years old. If he puts up a good showing and, say, would lose a close fight to Floyd, 40-some other people have, too. But it's really not going to hurt him.
You know, and that's key. I mean, you know, as a promoter, Don, that's always your ideal situation. You want to be in that situation. You know, if you're Golden Boy, you want that, hey, we're going to win regardless of whatever the outcome.
That's right.
You know, and is that the ideal situation? I mean, is that what you always try to create when you're
perfect.
A promoter?
Perfect. That is, Joseph, that is the ideal situation.
You know, we can't wait to see this happen. Now, let me get your thoughts on a couple of Golden Boy events that are going to be happening very soon. what's amazing is that we just spoke with Paulie Malignaggi on the show. He's always very entertaining. He and Adrian Broner have had a lot of heated exchanges. Should we expect more of the same in the ring on June 22nd?
Oh, I think so. And, you know, Paulie's going to be fired up for this. When the fight was made, I figured, Broner's tremendous prospect.
Mm-hmm.
I'll figure, he'll handle Paulie. Shouldn't be too much trouble. Then as the time has come on, and I've talked to Paulie a few times, and he's so confident, and I think it's going to be an interesting fight.
Yeah, I really think so as well. I think it's going to be much more competitive than a lot of Adrian Broner supporters feel that it's going to be. I mean,
yeah, it will be.
You know, because this is the first time that Adrian Broner will be facing someone at Paulie's level. I mean, he's a world-class boxer. He doesn't have that kind of world-class power, but he has that winning pedigree. He's a two-division world champion.
That's right. I mean, if he would come out and walk through Paulie like he has a few of his other opponents, DeMarco and Eloy Perez and that, if he could walk through Paulie like that, then you really have a budding superstar.
Wow, absolutely. So how exciting. You know, it seems to be somewhat of a blessing and a curse. HBO, pretty much, you know, at least for the time being, has washed their hands of Golden Boy Promotions. How tough has it been to make these matchups to appease the huge stable of fighters that Golden Boy currently has?
Well, you know, I think it's foolish for any organization to shut somebody out.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're not being fair to the fans. They don't care about the petty politics and we like this network better and that. They want to see the fights. So if you can make just some of the fights for that, you're satisfying your customers. And that's the way it should be. Forget this. Oh, they give Showtime better fights than they give me or that. Dig in and work and try to outbid them. Try to get the fights and that. That's what makes it. You just can't sit back. And, you know, I remember years ago when Don King took Tyson from HBO and went to Showtime. And
mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, that hurt HBO for a long time, because Tyson at that time was the cash cow that really, really drew.
You know, yeah, absolutely. You know, considered by most casual sports fans, HBO is still considered to be the premier stage of boxing. Because Floyd's event with Robert the Ghost Guerrero, tremendous fight, tremendous performance by Floyd, but if we look at the numbers, it really didn't, I guess, perform. That pay-per-view really didn't perform as well as everyone from Team Mayweather expected.
No, they thought that they would, but it's
primary
still,
reason.
Regardless of what you hear, they still went over the million mark. And, you know, let's face it, and I love Guerrero. He's one of the nicest kids in boxing in that.
Absolutely.
But he wasn't, a real strong opponent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did his best in there and tried, but he wasn't in other words, it was a tough sell.
That's right. That's right, and most people within the boxing industry, they realize that. But do you think that's one of the primary reasons why Floyd decided that, hey, this is the right time to take on a guy like Canelo Alvarez, someone who brings that kind of marketability, that kind of audience to the event. You know, for the first time in a very long time, I'm not the
well,
only
you
one.
You know, it could be like that, but, you know, people spend so much time writing, Showtime going to be sorry because Floyd's never going to fight anybody. And that, well, did anybody ever stop to think that maybe the people from Showtime protected themselves? They're just not handing out $30 million plus for each fight. Maybe Floyd wasn't in a position to say, okay, well, the next fight, then I'm going to take Joe Jones. And I still want my 30-some million.
Yeah, because this is, I mean, this is the first time since, I would say, since Miguel Cotto,
mm-hmm.
that someone has really brought that kind of marketability, that kind of purchasing power to the event. That's why this event and this match has so much potential. What do you project? I mean, honestly, I think this is going to prove to be the biggest monetary gain in the history of boxing.
Well, like I say, the one they're shooting at is for pay-per-view buys is they're shooting at $2.5 million. Most people think that they'll hit the $2 million mark in that, and some think they'll go over. But that is the figure that's been the biggest, and that was Floyd and Oscar.
You know, Oscar, he's already been on record that, hey, this is the toughest fight that Floyd could have actually chosen for himself. Now, obviously, he's such a huge proponent for Canelo Alvarez's career, and he really feels that he is the next big, big star of boxing. And, you know, this is a gentleman, Oscar De La Hoya, who was the face of boxing for a very long time. Do you see Canelo being that the next golden boy of boxing?
Oh, I definitely do. I definitely do.
You know, what is it, Don? What is it about this kid, Canelo, that really stokes the interest of all of the casual fight fans? Because as a promoter, you really can't put your finger on why or how or, you know, you really
no,
just
No, we're
to
back
shoot.
To that it question again. What is it? And I don't think anybody can really answer it. It's just, it's something I... Golden Boy had Canelo come to Vegas to a fight prior to his first fight with them here in the States. And, you know, I'd heard about him that he was a good drawing card in Mexico and that. And he showed up at the weigh-in and he was mobbed. I didn't realize that the people there even knew him. I mean, he was mobbed to the point where security had to get him out of there because the crowd was just crushing him.
Wow.
And this has been a couple of years ago.
That's right. You know, and quite honestly, I didn't realize how huge he was and what a huge fan favorite he was until we had that first media tour here in Texas to promote the Austin Trout bout here in San Antonio. I was astounded. I mean, everyone loves this kid, and a lot
well,
like the
saw
music
there,
industry.
40,000 people
wow.
at the Alamo Dome. I mean, who draws? You know, what fighter draws 40,000 people?
No, nobody nowadays, unless you're Manny
no.
Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather.
No.
So I tell you what, the future is definitely bright for Canelo and everyone at Golden Boy Promotions. Now, I'd like to get your opinion on this. And I was just asking Paulie Malignaggi about this because this is very difficult when you have so many big egos, so many fighters in your stable, and we look at the progression of Eric Gomez, someone who you've actually taken under your tutelage. He is turning into a real world-class matchmaker.
Excellent.
You know, what are your thoughts on the progression of Eric Gomez as a really great matchmaker?
I am so proud of him. You know, I worked with him from his first day there at Golden Boy, and he was just a great listener, and now he's gone to where he knows styles, and he's doing a terrific job. I'm just I'm proud of him. He's like a son to me.
That is tremendous, and you know, I don't think a lot of people understand what Pandya had in really showing this kid the ropes. I mean, because Eric Gomez, he's got the personality.
I'll tell you, it was a pleasure though working with him, because he was, you know, he was so appreciative in that, and he still does. In fact, my first day, it was my birthday at the when I was back at the Hall of Fame. I left at 6 a.m. on my birthday, and the first call I got was from Eric Gomez.
That's amazing, Don. And, you know, because not very many people realize this, that not only do you have to have an eye for a great style matchup, but you also have to be a salesman of sorts and sell the idea to both camps. How
absolutely.
Is that, Don?
That's, you know, I think back of some of the best fights that I've had in the different things in making. I think my all-time record, we started about 8 o'clock in the morning, and it went into the next day to make Oscar Larios and, what's his name? I'm getting goofy. You know, the great, great bantamweight, Frank Espinosa's, Israel Vasquez.
Oh, Izzy Vasquez, absolutely.
Yeah, they fought a great fight for me in Sacramento. Larios, in that fight, knocked him out the last round. But it was what a fight. But it was one of the toughest I've had to make.
Really?
That fight, it was just, it took 2 solid days of talking and cajoling and convincing and that to make it. It was the hardest.
Wow. You know, so what, how did you actually pull that together? Because if my memory serves me correctly, that was one of the best fights of the year.
Oh, it was. It was voted fight of the year. I don't know. Persistence, I guess.
That's amazing. So, you know, and there was bad blood between both camps. You know, if my memory serves me correctly, I think, and that was a Friday night fights bout, wasn't it?
Right.
So there was bad blood. Is that one of the reasons why it was so difficult to make, that both camps really didn't?
I think so. Neither one wanted to lose to the other.
Boy, that always makes for a great fight now, doesn't it?
It sure does.
You know, and that's almost what we see here with Paulie Malignaggi versus Adrian Broner, June 22nd. And, you know, I think just looking at this event, it just speaks volumes how Eric Gomez has really come full circle, because I don't think anyone would have actually seen this pairing, but this is absolutely masterful, just a brilliant job of matchmaking. Paulie Malignaggi, Adrian Broner, great style matchup. Don, who do you see walking away from this with their arm raised in victory, sir?
Well, I would make Broner But I think that Paulie's going to give him a terrific fight. You know, Paulie is bigger. Paulie can take a punch. And, you know, I look for a good fight. But can I tell you the fight I'm waiting for?
All right, let's hear it.
Matisse and Garcia.
Oh!
That's one of them.
That's
a matchmaker's dream.
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. 2 home run hitters.
Oh,
boy. 2 guys with great chins as well. I mean, this is going to be a battle of the chins. Whoever has the best chin is going to win this fight. Who do you think has the best chin? Because we've seen both guys really take a great shot.
I think in most departments, I think Matisse has a little edge. He's got a little edge in quickness, a little edge in punching power, and I think catches a little better. But I'll tell you, you can't keep that Garcia kid out. That's why I'm saying it's a fight I want to see. It's a great matchup. Two young prospects, two young fighters, both punchers. I can't wait to see that one.
You know what's amazing is, your good friend, the great Russell Peltz, you know, the great matchmaker, great promoter. This is a guy who brings all of his fighters up the hard way. And I know it's not one of his fighters, Danny Garcia, and then some. But, you know, he recently said, I don't know what it is about this kid, Danny Garcia. He doesn't do any one thing exceptionally well, but he just wins.
You know, there's a saying, Joseph, throughout boxing, for all fight managers to be on notice, if you're looking for a win, don't fight for Russell. Because he does not believe in giving you an easy fight.
Well, absolutely. You look at one of my favorite fighters right now, and it's because he always brings it. This kid is tough, and he's still learning the job, admittedly. And I'm referring to Mr. Gabriel Rosado.
He
fights
but
the
he
great
has,
Russell
Belt. Also has the Jennings, who's going to be fighting in the next couple of weeks, a great heavyweight prospect.
Oh, absolutely. And isn't he gracing the ring this Friday? It's going to be this Friday, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
This Friday.
That's why Russell
Sports.
Had to leave the hall a day early. Because he was busy with the fight.
Well, you know, God bless him for it, because he, a lot like you, realized that the fans are your boss, ultimately.
That's it.
You know, do you think a lot of promoters have lost sight of that, Don?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely they have.
You know,
a lot of them figure, and this is part of the TV networks. I think I've told you this once before, they've placed so much importance on that one loss record. That's all they think about. If you get him a fighter and he's 16-3, the first thing they ask you, well, what do you do in those three losses? You know, he might have lost to three good fighters in their hometown.
How do we get back to this mentality then, Don, that, you know, because you look at every other era in boxing, there was never this emphasis on a single win and a single loss. You know, is that what you thought about when you're helping cultivate Canelo's career? Is that, hey, we need to progress our fighter, but keep him in his winning ways as well? You know, and how do you think it's going to affect him if he does eventually lose to Floyd, or will it?
No, I don't think it will if he loses to him. I really don't, because of his youth. I mean, you never know a devastating knockout or something, how it's going to affect a fighter. Like, we don't know now how Manny Pacquiao is going to be, you know, after that knockout he had. You never know until you see him in there.
Yeah, it's a very good
point.
But
I think with Canelo, if he makes a creditable showing and would lose a decision, don't forget he's got Floyd being 36 years old. If he had a rematch in a year, Floyd then is going to be over 37.
Wow. Even
you know,
more money.
There's only one Bernard Hopkins around.
Oof, that's a very, very good point. And you're not going to hear me argue with you, Don, on this show.
No. You know that I saw Bernard at the Las Vegas fight. He was talking, and he told me he hadn't had a cookie in, like, I think it was 7 years. He absolutely will not let himself get out of shape.
Well,
he does a little road work when he's got nothing on.
Wow.
You know, even a fight's not scheduled.
Well, it's just a testament to all of this, you know, and it just proves all of, testament to his work ethic, all of the success that he's had. And yeah, Bernard Hopkins is a living legend. He's a freak of nature. But Don, gosh, the time just flies whenever you're on the air. We want to thank you for being with us.
All right, Joseph, listen, as always, I really enjoyed it. You know, I'm my happiest when I'm talking boxing.
Oh, well, we love you for it. God bless you, Don, and we hope to have you back very, very soon. Thank you so much.
Anytime you want, Joseph.
Thank you, Don. We'll be speaking to you very soon, sir. God bless you, and you keep kicking, my friend.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, Don. Well, JK, it looks like we ran a little bit over time, but we want to apologize to all of the fans of Adonis Stevenson who are hoping to listen to him tonight. Apparently, we had a couple of communication problems, scheduling problems, so we hope to get him back on the show very, very soon. Also, we were scheduled to originally interview Mr. Aries Landilotta, and unfortunately, he is on vacation right now, so he couldn't be with us as well. But we will schedule them very, very soon, hopefully within the next couple of weeks or so. But, JK, do you have an idea of what we might have in store next Tuesday for all of our great listeners?
Well, Joseph, the only thing I can say that the only one that I know that we have next week that's already confirmed is Mr. Antonio Tarver.
Wow. Did you hear that, guys? We're going to be featuring the Magic Man, Antonio Tarver, making his long-awaited comeback in the ring. Well, I tell you what, guys, this is going to be really interesting, and I really hope, JK, that maybe we can make a special 45-minute segment for Mr. Antonio Tarver, and we can really let some of our great listeners, some of the great fans of boxing, call in and possibly ask future Hall of Famer Antonio Tarver some questions. Wouldn't that be great, James?
Yes, sir. I will see what I can do about that.
Our fearless producer. JK, you do a tremendous job booking the show every single week, week in and week out. So thank you for all of your efforts, my friend. We know how frustrating it is sometimes to deal with all of the schedules and doing a live show, but we really appreciate it. I appreciate it especially. You make my job so easy, man, always interviewing these great guests. So thank you, man. On behalf of all of our listeners, thank you for all of the great work that you're doing on the Pugilist Corner. So I tell you what, brother, take us home. I know we've run over time, but, man, I just had to say thank you on behalf of all of our listeners, my friend.
Well, thank you, Joseph. Thank all our listeners. And thank our guest tonight, Mr. Sugar Hill, Champion Fast Eddie, of course, the Twitter King, Paulo Malignaggi, Mr. Jamal Charlo, and, of course, the great Hall of Fame promoter, Mr. Don Chargan. Thank you, everyone, and I will see you next week. And don't forget to check out Joe and I Sunday on the Weekend Wrap. Have a great one. We'll see you next week on the Pugilist Corner.